इतिहास द इंडियन हिस्ट्री पॉडकास्ट।
हाय एंड वेलकम बैक टू येट अनदर एपिसोड ऑफ इतिहास 2.0। दिस इज अ पॉडकास्ट वेयर वी आर रीलुकिंग एट इंडियन हिस्ट्री across multiple years, across multiple domains. Currently, we have been tracing history of evolution of Indian media, particularly cinema or films. And today's episode is going to talk about not history of cinema per se, it's more going to be about history in cinema. I am joined today by two amazing people, one being from Australia directly. So this is actually the first time that I'm having somebody on this podcast from Australia. I'm joined by Hrushikesh Arvekar. Hrushikesh is a film scholar and a screenwriter. He's currently pursuing his PhD in film studies in Australia. And I am joined by Anupam Barve. Anupam is a filmmaker, a film educator, and he has been active in the domain of film studies and filmmaking for the past little more than a decade or so. So hi Hrushikesh, hi Anupam, and welcome on this podcast. It's really lovely to have you here.
Hello, hi, good to be here.
Hi, same here.
Right. I would like to begin our conversation today from a very pertinent question, which is history in cinema, as we are discussing. When does a historical film become a historical film? Say, there are so many hundreds of so-called historical films, quote-unquote, in Bollywood, in Hollywood, I'm sure in other film businesses across the world. When you say that a particular film is a historical film, what exactly does it mean? And let's say, I can say that a film that depicts a 700-year-old story is a historical film. So is a film that depicts 300-year-old story, and let's say so is a film that depicts a 30-year-old story. So my question to both you, Anupam, and Hrushikesh is, when does a historical film start becoming a historical film? Is there any process for that?
No, I have actually a counter question to that question here. Would a historical film necessarily entail me today making a film on a historical event or a historical person or anything from what I would kind of start qualifying as history? Let's say me making a film today on something that's very contemporary and something that's very into quotes right now. So let's say the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. If I were to make a film today on the COVID-19 pandemic, would it, say, in 2030 become a historical film? You know, so I think if we were to start the classification, we need to also ask ourselves these questions to begin with, of what we look at when we're looking at, or how we decide to term historical cinema to begin with. Is it something that would necessarily prima facie what, you know, in a very conventional popular realm we feel is historical? So it would something that is shown to me in a 4:3 aspect ratio become historical? Something which has grain and film scratches on it and is black and white is historical? Would something that is shot in greenish sepia necessarily entail that it's from the 70s? Would something that's gotten very primary colors and bright reds and blues and yellows be from, say, a David Dhawan era of the 90s? I think we need to begin by asking ourselves a question of what we mean when we say historical cinema to begin with. Because technically, would we say that yesterday is history? Mm. So could we then say that, let's say, a film made on the 15th of August this year, which is based on 15th of August this year, say something that happened on that day, would we in September this year say it's historical? So we need to kind of start asking ourselves that. When does contemporary stop being contemporary and become historical?
To his one question, I have five questions. And they would be that, I mean, the basic rules of journalism are that. And I would ask, in some senses, because journalism is a form of documentation and then it becomes a part of the archive and history. So I would say what, when, where, how and why is something historical. If we ask these five questions, then all of this comes under scrutiny for why something is historical, how it becomes historical, what is historical, and when. And when is the historical question is something we generally assume to be the only question. But all these three, four questions then lead us to all these others.
I don't know, let's say a period drama, which is popularly called as a period drama, like Bajirao Mastani. Now, let's not even get into the actual depiction of real historical events, etc. That's a separate episode altogether. But let's say Bajirao and the other people in this film existed. So it's not fiction. Since these people existed 300 years ago, that is also not too long ago. This is history, and the makers are trying to depict history in that. So in this context, why does Bajirao Mastani become historical is evident because it talks of people who existed in history. Now my question is, how does it become historical and what exactly in that story becomes historical?
Well, it is historical because it's documented in some ways. What we think is documented is also depicted actually. Again, there is a very sort of definite distinction between what is text and what is image, right? Getting back to Bajirao Mastani, that this is a historical fictional account, historical dash fictional account. Now, there might be people who may not exist in history and yet be made a part of this. So how much of a role does popular memory play as a part of history? That is another question.
Interesting that you use the word memory here, Hrushikesh, because when we see memory is unreliable. When we say, because you also said earlier something about documentation, I think the whole quest of wanting to make something historical is the viewers and the makers sometimes insistence on trying to conform the ideas of what actually happened and their manifestation within this fictional space of going close to or giving an impression of going close to the authenticity somewhere. So, which is why people do not necessarily like something like, say, a Hiram. A Hiram will make them uncomfortable, and so will an Inglorious Bastards, because they'll say, hey, this is not what happened. This is somebody taking the artistic liberty to thrust in their own artifice within what we understand as something that happened. So I think our own dilemmas between fact and fiction in terms of, not just fact and fiction, but actuality and artifice, documentation, documentary and created stories and so on. So I think the answer to why historical fiction and what historical fiction lies in those dilemmas that we have of wanting to picturize or manifest something that we want to see as truth as it happened. So that also lends us to an interesting question, because now we are living in an age where more and more stuff gets audiovisually documented. When we make a film on the Holocaust and we only have some rare archive footage that reels that were shot of, say, bombings that were done or migrants that were fleeing away or Jews in their camps and so on. But now increasingly we are living in an age where so much is documented on, say, CCTV. Or we are doing our Facebook lives. Now that we have so much of documentation of actuality around us, when we will go in our own futures and look back at today's time, would we then be able to make a historical fiction film at all? Or would we just compile together documentation that we have from a certain time and then call it a historical film? It's interesting, right? I mean, the Second World War happened, and yet there's no end to the films made on the Second World War. We've seen how many. There's a few thousand films now, and yet somebody still feels the craving or the necessity to want to make yet another one. And that, I think, comes in from what Hrushikesh said about memory. Because memory is so unreliable and because it's so imperfect, that regardless of how much document anybody has, people still like to imagine memories. People still like to create artifice. People still like to, even within the confines of what people think is document and think is history or think is truth, there is still a sense of interpretation in that because it is written by somebody.
The moment when you say that it is written by somebody or it is documented by an external entity, it might be a historiographer, it might be a traveler, it might be anybody else, there is a subjective bias or an interpretative bias that comes in picture. Actually, I want to draw both of you to a logical question after this. Where do biopics so-called biopics fit into this whole thing? Because as you just mentioned, Anupam, there's always this blurry line of truth versus artifice. So when you say that I'm making a historical film or somebody has made a historical film and it is a biopic, are we expecting as audience that we will get a 100% true account of somebody's life? Is it fair on us to expect as an audience that we have to get it? And if something else is inserted under the name of creative freedom or maker's freedom, then people get ferocious about a particular thing. So how do you negotiate with this whole biopic? I won't call it a problem, but it's a complicated entity.
So I was just finishing reading a book on essays of cinema in Pakistan. One of the essays deals with Manto. The person writing the essay talks about the Pakistani film made on Manto and the Nandita Das film made on Manto. So the Pakistani film made on Manto deals with his later years in Pakistan after division, after partition, and what he has to encounter. And it's very melancholic, and it's about his sorrows and how he turned into an alcoholic and so on and so forth. Right? One end is that. The other end is the left liberal politics that Nandita Das plays in her film as well, that he's the voice of freedom of expression and so on and so forth. Actually, there is another dimension to Manto, which is really playful. And Manto would go and walk up to actresses and tell them that I know you're having an affair with so-and-so, and I will write about it in the newspaper unless you give me money for alcohol. There's stuff like that about him, which is probably there in the popular memory, as Anupam said, that there are things which are in popular memory but are known to history. And then there are things which are documented in a biopic. Interestingly, the person writing this essay was a person related to Manto. And she had this insistence about, oh no, there are these things in the Pakistani film which are wrong. There are these things in the Indian film which are wrong. When you're making a film, especially a biopic, you're getting to the truth of a person. You're not getting to a historical truth about that personality itself, but the larger truth of what is going on at that point of time in history. We can't necessarily extend artistic truth to historical truth. Perhaps the artistic truth is larger than the historical truth.
Also, I would also like to, you know, responding to your question in some bits of the question. I think people are erroneous when they hold some version or account of history as an absolute, and then only compare something that somebody has made, which could be interpretative or could be a little laterally away from what they considered as the absolute. And then they either get offended or surprised at how this doesn't conform with their idea of what may have happened. They're not necessarily aware of the fact that what has come to them as truth was also an account and right. was also an interpretation. So I think therein lies the problem of wanting to watch history as people understand it. Because I don't think we can use, I mean, the word artistic freedom or artistic liberty is inherent to history. Because somebody's accounted it, somebody's told it to you, somebody's passed it forth. And you know, when we begin teaching documentary, and we generally ask this question to students saying, if I put a CCTV here, would that become a documentary? They say, no, it will become documentation because it's actually objectively looking at the truth in front of it. But then what do we do of the frame? Because we also decide which frame, I mean, where the CCTV camera is going to point at and what it's going to look at. So we also decide to eliminate things out when we decide to occupy some things within it. The same would be true about history as well. So we can't really hold on to an account as something that is crystallized and like an absolute truth. Mm. And then look at something else only with that as a reference in mind. Looking at historical stuff, one needs to be more open at it, the whole idea of interpretation. And, you know, so I think creative and expressive liberty or freedom is an inherent thing to anything that is from another time.
Just a brief pointer there is that if history is narrative, then all narratives differ from one another. And say a Maratha narrative will differ from a Rajput narrative, right? All of those are, I think, very interesting moments in history and in contemporary history.
Actually, it's that contemporary history word that you just said, Hrishikesh, which I want to talk about further. You know, we began with this question that when does historical film become a historical film? Let's say tomorrow, if we capture today's history of you, of me, will this qualify as a historical film 15 years later in 2035?
It technically, yes, but people either like morals. So they want a moral at the end of the story. So generally when you, what we popularly call as the lay person or a commoner and so on, if you were to depict any of that, then there's something about humility and about simplicity and about some sense of a spoonful of moral, something that is shoved at the audience at the end of it. If not that, then there's grandeur. Then there's kings and palaces and queens and battles. And see, people also want an escape from the drab reality that they exist in.
True.
And which is what people find, like people find comfort in history in doing that. So people don't want to talk about an accountant during the Peshwa time. People don't want to talk about a cobbler from say the Satavahan period.
Yeah.
What you would be talking about is the sculptors who made Ajanta. You want stories of valor and bravery. You want stories of sacrifice. You want all these heightened peaks of emotional value or sentiment. So if you, unless it's like Jataka tales or it's Aesop's fables and so on, which is about commoners, then there's a moral.
There's a moral of the story.
So there has to be some kind of value attached to it. So anyway, Hrishikesh.
So there is a cultural value, there is a moral value, and there is a economic value. Because history is always a question of the present. History is never a question of what history was, but what history is. I think that's the most pertinent question that we can ask of history. What does it mean today? I think at a certain point of time, we need to ask this question. And until and unless we ask that question, why is a film being made will remain trivial. And all history is being written in present. History never finishes. That's the point.
Right.
You can never finish history. History is an unfinished project.
Right. And that's, I think that's a very valid point. It's always under construction project. It never ends. Anupam, what do you say on this?
Yeah, I think to kind of also encapsulate it, this really well-known and well-renowned historical, I mean, he's a fiction writer. He writes a lot about history and imagination and memory and so on. So this writer called Julian Barnes. So he says it's somewhere between the inadequacies of documentation and the imperfections of memory. So history lies at that point of certainty, which is where the imperfections of memory meet the inadequacies of documentation. And I think one couldn't have summed it better than this way, because we constantly try and identify that point and we can't find it, because like Rushi said, the project of history has never really finished. It's an ongoing project, something that started in the 30s, and people are still going out and recording stuff, and it's never going to stop. And yet our memory is still constantly going to be imperfect at all times.
Right.
So where do you meet between the inadequacy of documentation and the imperfection of memory, and where do you calibrate your point for yourself? Is, you know, wherein lies the answer to the question about history to begin with, and especially more so applicable to cinema being an audiovisual art where you have actually a visual representation of stuff.
Mm.
And because cinema is a medium which tends to want to pull its audience towards naturalism, so there's also this insistence of something being real. Unlike say fiction, unlike say literature, unlike say poetry, unlike say music, or songwriting or anything else, cinema is something that inherently tries to bring people more close towards naturalism. And hence, I think that point becomes ever so important for us to try and locate.
I completely agree. And, you know, then in that case, echoing what Hrishikesh said, there's actually no end to this discussion, because it is a project under construction and it will keep on going. So I think when we are starting to talk about history in cinema, we have to recognize that it's not about what happened in past. It's always, we have to trace its relevance to what is happening today. We have to recognize it's an unfinished business. Hrishikesh, the very first point that you mentioned about basic 5 W's and 1 H applied to a historical film, all of these points become extremely relevant to anybody who's trying to trace how history is depicted in cinema. So I think for today's episode, we'll stop here for the time being. We'll come up with a few more episodes in due course of time. Till then, stay tuned.